May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
There's an old jazz standard that's been ringing in my ears this week. It's called Comes Love. There's many great covers. Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald did a cover, and I'm partial to one by the Wood Brothers, but it's a simple song. It goes back and forth describing maladies that can befall a person on any given day, and then describes what to do about those maladies. Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can get a little heat. Comes love, nothing can be done. And I love that line. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes a headache, you can lose it in a day. Comes a toothache, see your dentist right away. Comes love, nothing can be done. We're beholden to the complexity of love in ways that other things just don't grab us. And I love the simplicity in the song describing that complex notion of giving ourselves over to this immensely powerful cosmic force. Comes love, nothing can be done. And this song came to mind this week mainly because of our reading from Song of Solomon. My beloved speaks and says to me, "Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For now the winter is past, the rain is over and gone." Song of Solomon is a book filled with beautiful poetry, but generally I find people don't really know what to do with the Song of Solomon. It's one of those books in the Bible that perplexes us, this back and forth between two people describing their love for each other. It's intimate, it's romantic, it's powerful. And for some, that intimacy makes us uncomfortable. And there have been many throughout history that have been confounded by its inclusion in our holy text. As with all of the texts in the Bible, countless attempts have been made to give it applicable meaning. And I'm sure some attempts are closer than others to what would have been its original intention and purpose. There are allegorical understandings that look at it as love between Christ and the church. There are understandings that put it more into the category of the love that should exist in a marriage. And that makes sense, as most of our interactions with the Song of Solomon are at weddings. I think it's helpful to understand the context of the Song of Solomon, or at least the pieces we know. It's one of those things where we have to guess at what it's about, because there's not really a lot of historical data on what it is. So even though it's attributed to King Solomon, he most likely did not write this. We're not even sure when it was written or why it was written. The poetic verses are styled in the tradition of ancient Mesopotamian love songs. So this is the Taylor Swift of its day. The verses were almost certainly set to music at some point, and likely they are the Hebrew version of wedding songs. It's not even clear if it's meant to be taken as a single work, all the verses together, or if the different chapters are really just different songs in the same style. What's more clear, though, is how the text has been interpreted. Like I said, allegory seems to be the dominant way in which this text has been understood throughout the ages. There is substantial historical writings that show Jewish interpretation of this text as an allegorical representation of God's relationship with Israel. Christians, too, have found that the text is a descriptor of Christ's relationship with the church. The voice of my beloved, look, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. It certainly describes a strong love, leaping upon mountains, bounding over hills. The flowers appear upon the earth. The time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. It describes a love that desires a fruitful existence, a love that brings about beauty in the world, a love that calls us to action, a love that calls us to relationship. These are all certainly wonderful ways to describe our relationship with God, a reflexive relationship, a relationship built on infatuation, a relationship where humanity and the divine are deeply intertwined, deeply committed to each other. Of course, these have to be allegorical readings of this text because God isn't mentioned once in the whole book. It's two people that are infatuated with each other, two people connected on a deep and soulful level. Will Willimon, friend of the parish who you might remember preached here in January, has a different take on this text. He writes, "Thank God Israel and later the church in their collective wisdom retained this unusual but beautiful book in the Bible. This world, our bodies, they are all spectacular creations of an abundantly creative creator. The greatest sin would be not to celebrate their beauty too much, but not to notice. As these two ancient lovers lovingly recount every detail of their partner, they thereby bid us to notice ourselves and others in the world. To love is to notice God in the details. To notice is to love." Willimon's point is that, sure, there are some allegorical implications of these words, but isn't it more wonderful that there's a whole book in the Bible that celebrates the idea of love, love between humans, this complicated, under-understood concept that drives so much of our lives, this force that we truly believe to be the foundation of the universe. This force is actually something that allows us to see God in the world. Willimon writes, "This is a text to be done as doxology, as praise to God from whom all blessings flow." And I love that. Thanksgiving to God for the love we experience in the world, the love we are beholden to, as that old jazz standard reminds us. Comes love, nothing can be done. There's no use fighting it, no use overanalyzing it. The joy of the Song of Solomon is that love exists. The joy of the Song of Solomon is that God has instilled in the very foundation of the world a sense of joy and beauty, a joy and beauty that we get to discover within each other. To love is to notice God in the details. This easily stated yet hard-lived principle shows up a lot in our readings. And I think we can see it today in the gospel. The Pharisees see Jesus' disciples eating without doing the ritual cleaning. And they ask Jesus why his disciples don't follow the Jewish law. Jesus then rebukes them, quoting Isaiah, saying, "This their lips, but their hearts are far from me." I take that as a rebuke of neglecting to notice God. In the midst of Jesus sharing his incredible message of love, in the midst of the crowds rejoicing in a message of love and acceptance, of healing and forgiveness, the Pharisees instead get nitpicky about a faux pas rather than noticing the love of God right in front of their eyes. It's not a rebuke of the law itself. By all means, folks, let's wash our hands before we eat. But it's a rebuke of forgetting what the law is for. These rituals and commands are handed down from generation to generation to help people remember their loving relationship with God. Just as Jesus says, he comes to fulfill the law, not to abolish it. With God incarnate right in front of them, with the loving presence of the creator of the world just within reach, The Pharisees would do well to remember that love does not need to be ritualized, codified, or controlled. Comes love, nothing can be done. May we remember that love need not be understood. Love need not be over-explained. Love need not be put into a box. Love simply needs to be witnessed. Love simply needs to be experienced. Love simply needs to be done. Love simply needs to be. Because it's not a force within our control. Rather, it's a force that God has embedded into the deep fabric of the universe that calls us to grab a hold of our neighbors, our friends, our enemies, our strangers, family, to anchor ourselves into the deep call of relationship, to notice the ways in which God has created beauty in the world, the ways in which God has instilled that beauty within each person. When we take time to notice God's presence in the world, we see how deeply we are loved, how deeply God is invested in us, how beholden we are to God for the goodness around us. How remarkable it is to be in a state of grace from which nothing can separate us from God. Comes love, nothing can be done because God's already done it. Amen.